I'm going in search of witches.
Witches?
Witches. Mm-hmm. I guess you found me out, huh? Yeah. You should come around here on Halloween. You'd really see something then.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we all jump off the roof and fly.
You know, sort of like a coven.
You're placed fester under some strange sexual spell.
At what time will we be spellcasting?
Hey there, witches, and welcome to Moonstone Witchery, the podcast where we talk about witchcraft and spirituality in a modern context. My name is Rian Lockhart, and I am so glad to be here with you today. You can find me on all the places by looking for me under Moonstone Witchery. One thing that I do want to say is, don't believe it if someone friend requests you on Instagram specifically, and they seem like they might be me, and then they roll up into your DMs and they're like, what do they say, like grand rising my love or something like that, and they offer you a reading. That's not me. There are so many scammers out there. Please don't believe them. Please block them and report them and get them taken down. Instagram has not been very helpful with this. I am working on getting verified so that it becomes even more apparent what my real accounts are and what they are not. But in the meantime, I will never cold read you. I will never slide into your DMs. That's not my thing. If you want a reading with me, you can definitely book one through my website. I am booked out a couple months, but I would be glad to have you. So let's get started. Last podcast episode was on the law of attraction, and I guess I'm covering big topics because this week's episode is about, drumroll please, cultural appropriation. Applause or boo, depending on whether you've been waiting for me to say something about this or you already know about this and you just want to boo the concept in general, which I agree with you. Let's chat about it because, well, let's start with a premise. I'm just going to dive right in. Let's start with a premise, right? And this is an assumption, but we have to start somewhere. And often our starting points are assumptions. And I'll let that little bit of shadow work just kind of just linger there in the air. The assumption that I'm having here is, and it's kind of a big one, and it's not going to apply to everyone. However, my assumption is this. If you are a spiritually aligned person, or if you are working on awakening or enlightenment or ascension or merging with your higher self or any other variation of the same thing, attaining nirvana, any of that, if you are a person on their spiritual path, my assumption is that you are someone who is interested in introspection, that you're interested in answering large philosophical questions that motivate humanity to improve upon itself or to make sense of itself, and that you're interested in fundamentally like knowing our purpose and trying to live in alignment with it, right? So again, some big assumptions. However, if I haven't lost you yet, I'm super excited that you're still here with me. So given that, we need to understand and define our terms. If I'm here on a spiritual path, and I've centered that spiritual path as something that's important to me, which, let's be really clear, not everybody does this. You know, there's whole people living whole lives completely void of spiritual connection or ethical connection. Now, for me, spirituality and ethical alignment kind of do go hand in hand. And that's one of the foundational assumptions and principles of what motivates me. So for me, when I decided to center spirituality as a part of who I am and who I choose to be in this world, I realized I had to get to the root of some things. And some of the things I had to get to the root of was big questions like, what is our purpose for existing? Sidebar, as I do. Isn't it bizarre that we even like exist? What in the actual F are we doing here? Does anybody else worry, ever think about this? Can you even wrap your head around the fact that we're all here? We all have consciousness. We're all on the ride, but we don't know how we got on the ride. We don't know what the purpose of the ride is. We don't know when the ride will end. And we don't understand the context in which the ride exists. And yet here we are. And people are just maneuvering about life, not really ever stopping and being like, what the hell though? What are we doing? Why are we here? How do we exist? What is the purpose for the fact that we exist? And I can't ever really stop thinking about questions like this. And I find it so weird. It's like we woke up on that part of a roller coaster where it's going up the hill and we don't have any say in it. You know, I recently bought a shirt that says, well, how does this shirt go? It says, I did not consent to exist or something. It's not a happy, positive shirt. It's not inspirational or motivational, but boy, does it summarize a mood on a certain type of day. So for those of us who are on a spiritual path, we are compelled by these kinds of thoughts because quite honestly, sorry, still on the sidebar, but consciousness doesn't really serve a lot of evolutionary benefits. So there must be another reason for it. Because if I'm conscious, I can make bad decisions. I can work against myself. I can put myself in harm's way. I can damage myself. I can depress myself. I could kill myself. Trigger warning, sorry. But seriously, there's a lot of things I could do with my consciousness that works against the apparent purpose of existence, which is reproduction, if we're going to distill it down on a science level. But I could choose to not reproduce. I could choose to do lots of things, but my consciousness is not really an innate positive factor to the evolutionary trajectory of the species existing. Said another way, me having awareness that I exist isn't really a benefit, in a purely science, right? If I was to wander into the science argument of existence being completely random and just evolutionary, and at one point we were all single cell beings and now we're humans with stress anxiety disorders, what is the purpose of that? And consciousness doesn't help advance the species in my eyes really at all, because we have free will when we have consciousness and we have an abundance of self-awareness and we can just F the whole thing up. And many of us do and have done and will do. And so consciousness being an evolutionary thing doesn't actually make a lot of sense. So that leads us to go, okay, well, if it doesn't make sense in advancing the science answers, then there must be additional answers. And those additional answers are compelling and interesting to me because they lead us to spirituality and the notion of God or universal collective unconsciousness or consciousness, as the case may be. It leads us to, unity theory and oneness and the spiritual plane. And it leads us to questions like, what if this is all just a simulation? Or why though? Why though just sums up a lot of it. So, okay. If we are on a spiritual path, I'm back on track. I'm back on the spiritual path. If we are on a spiritual path, presumptively, we could say that we are interested in the concepts that are the foundation of the spiritual component to being alive, right? And so those concepts are things like what I was just talking about, but on a deeper kind of, or less deep actually, on a more practical level, those concepts are more like, okay, well, we do exist, we are alive, we do have consciousness, no one knows why, but here we are. let's make the best of it and like let's spruce up the joint, right? And let's like figure out what we're doing. And when we realize we're not here on an island, we exist in togetherness of some form. I would argue that that's our first clue about things, is that there must be a purpose to the fact that we're not objectively alone. While at the same time, duality teaches us that we are actually always alone, because everything that happens is filtered through your own interpretation of it. And so you're actually always just interacting with yourself. But I'll let that one be for a moment. But we're not alone. And so we're here all together. And so there must be purpose in working together and in coming together and in unifying in some way. And okay, so if we do that, then we have to kind of govern systems, right? We have to create systems of behavior and socialization and interacting with each other. And when we do that, thus is birthed an ethical code, right? Because if I start to interact with the collective and I'm acting out in some type of chaos, the collective is going to be like, yo, knock it off. You can't be like that. And then I'd be like, why? And they'd be like, because universally we've agreed that like that behavior is unacceptable. And so we learn through spirituality, because it is intangible and it is a combination of emotions and physical behaviors, like what the ethical rules are. Like we learn what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. Now, these rules adapt and change over time, because society adapts and changes over time. And there's a direct correlation with like the evolution of technology and how it impacts society and how it changes the systems that we like operate with each other within and all that stuff. So what I'm saying is, as things go along and as the external world and advancements change, so do the social norms, so do the way we interact change. And it's all fluid and it's all in flux. And sidebar, that would make me say, like, don't believe the rules too hard, because it's like all in flux, but the foundation is the same. And the foundation can be found, and now I'm going to anchor into my ordination as an interdenominational minister, because I did attend divinity school, and not an online school that like just clickety clacks and I get like some piece of paper. I like went to divinity school, and then I got ordained, and then I sat on the faculty and I ordained others. Now, there is a common universal foundation that is found amongst most major world religions and schools of thought and philosophies, and that foundational truth is essentially the golden rule, which says, do to others how you would like them to do to you. Like, behave, treat others how you want to be treated. It's basically like, don't be a jerk, because you don't like it when someone's a jerk to you. And this, by the way, is something I'm always trying to teach my children, because like one of them will do something to the other one, and then the child who has had the thing happen to them will be like, stop, which is like the worst sound ever. But they'll go, stop, and then they will retaliate by doing the same thing to their sibling that was just done to them. And I have to go, pause, please. If you didn't like what your sibling just did to you, why would you then do it to them when you know firsthand how much you don't like it? Doesn't that make you the same as them? And aren't you trying to point out that what they did wasn't right? So why would you do a wrong thing to try to point out that something's wrong? Doesn't make any sense now, does it? And I say this like every day, at least once a day, because what I'm trying to say, and a lot of adults in this world could really go ahead and like take that advice, like someone cuts you off in traffic, so then you cut them off in traffic and whatever. If you don't like what somebody does to you, don't do it to them. That's the point. What I'm trying to get down to is that there are some common universal thoughts here about what we're doing, but like also how we should interact with each other. And the way that we need to interact with each other is based on concepts such as like, let's be kind to each other, love thy neighbor as you would love yourself, like uplift one another, support one another, be in community together, treat each other nicely, and we will all be fine. Now, wouldn't it have been nice if that is how that went? But that's not how that went. No, that is not how that went. A lot of corruption came in, and power exists, and then money was invented, and then you know, certain constructs of like society were invented, such as like class, and all kinds of things happened, and people started getting mean because I don't think it's the true nature of people to be mean. I think that a scarcity situation brings out meanness because survival brings out meanness. But even after we've moved out of a state of survival being a persistent and urgent need for many of us, but not for all of us, and please don't forget that, the meanness has kind of stuck around, and I find that inappropriate. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to help correct here in my own little pocket of the universe. Okay. If we are spiritual people walking a spiritual path, and we therefore care about what it means to be spiritually aligned, and we therefore understand that it means getting on board with a code of ethics or a system of beliefs, and then we realize that one of the foundation beliefs is to like do unto others as we would wish to have done unto us, and then we see how wrong that has gone in the course of history. My presumption here would be to expect that anyone walking a spiritual path would want to correct or realign or readjust the ways in which the culture has taken such a sharp turn in an opposite direction from where it should have been going or where it began or what that foundation set upon us was. See, I would think that there would be a realization that would happen within the souls of the spiritually aligned people, and that that realization would say something like, okay, things are kind of messed up. They only wake us up and bring us to this plane of existence when we have to course correct, when we have to adjust. How many of you listening identify as light workers? Because that is the purpose of a light worker. A light worker apparently is here to help bring the light. But they misunderstood it a little bit, because in bringing the light, guess what, light workers? You have to go into the dark places and then illuminate there. You have to admit there are dark places that need light in order to shine upon it. You must be willing to see what is wrong and be willing to stand up and correct it. So my spiritual assumptions that I'm making, right, is that if you're a spiritually aligned person who thinks these thoughts and values these values, right? You're going to say to yourself, okay, I'm awake in this era. There must be a need for me. And that removes your ego, by the way. It doesn't make you like some type of like vanity centered, like pseudo narcissist. It means that like you understand that if you exist and you are awake to a degree, there's a need for you. Your life is here in service. We are here in service. And so our service as spiritually awakened people is to right some of the wrongs, you know, it's to bring alignment, it's to course correct. I'm trying to find another way to say the same thing. Our service here is to do enough of our own self-work to reparent ourselves, to nurture ourselves, to deconstruct the binaries of the world that we were indoctrinated into, to recenter and refocus ourselves so that we can be a clear vessel without our own stuff getting in the way and contaminating us. And this is why I'm always like ranting and like telling everybody to do shadow work, because the shadow work isn't the purpose of life. The shadow work is to get you to the purpose of life. I need to get through the shadow work so I can actually live my purpose. The shadow work is like the to-do list before I get to like do the real thing. Shadow work is like setting up the party. Your life is living in the party. Your shadow work can take your entire life though, because we avoid it because we don't like it. But yo, stripping away all of the things you were told is so good and helpful, and it lets you be yourself and live the life you were supposed to. So let's just get the shadow work done. Become a clear vessel. Reparent yourself. Teach yourself everything you wish you had been taught. Define what it means to be a good person and learn how to become that person. I get that we weren't all taught that. I get that it wasn't modeled for us. But it's urgent. It's urgent for us to figure out what, who and what we want to be and to become that, regardless of whether it was made easy for us or not. It's urgent because we're here in service, and your service is you being you. And you being you in a way that is not harmful, or as minimally harmful as possible. So if that's the case, and we're trying to minimize harm, what we have to do is see all the ways in which harm has already been imparted, not necessarily by us, but by our predecessors. Because we're here to clean up a mess that we didn't necessarily make, but that we participate in daily because of the way the structure of society is. And we've got to be like, oh, oops, this is bad and wrong. Let's fix it. And there's so many of these areas. Oh my gosh, like, you know, I talk about it constantly. The patriarchy and homophobia and ageism and ableism and racism and sexism and, you know, all of the isms, xenophobia. There's so many. Anti-Semitism is another one. There's just so many. So many places that need cleaning up. Capitalism. Basically, if it's an ism, it probably needs some support. Needs some of that magical light shown on it. Now, in the spirituality communities, there's this thing happening. And it's unfortunate because it comes from a beautiful place. And yet, we can have positive intentions and come from a place of beauty, but still accidentally do harm. You know, like, if you had a difficult or toxic upbringing, your parents might not have meant for you to have a difficult or toxic upbringing. They might have been doing the best they could with the resources they had. And yet, the outcome was still difficult and toxic. It just can be that way. And so, the beautiful but ultimately difficult and maybe toxic thing that's happening in spirituality communities that I want to talk about today is cultural appropriation. This topic raises a lot of hackles. People get so mad about this topic. I just think it's kind of important, though, because if we are spiritual people trying to minimize the harm in the universe and to correct the wrongs that have been set in place before us by our predecessors, then we have to have a willingness to admit to the things that are wrong and to know that it's not an attack if we're doing something that's accidentally wrong or harmful. It just is a thing. Like, yo, I was in my Facebook memories, I don't know, a couple months ago maybe, and I've had Facebook for forever, so don't judge, but like, this post that I made was from probably like 14 years ago. Like, I'm not kidding, I've had Facebook for forever. Originally, for those of you who are like, whatever the next generation after millennials is called, originally, Facebook only was released to people in certain colleges because it was supposed to be like a college student network, which is classes unto itself. So we're not surprised that the infrastructure of Facebook is like white male classes to shit, because it was originally only released to like Ivy League and pseudo Ivy League schools. Now, I wasn't in an Ivy League school, but I was in a pseudo Ivy League school. And so I was one of these people that got to have Facebook in my like second or third year of college, early 2000s. And it was like forever ago. So 13 or 14 years ago, I made this post and I said, PSA, because apparently I've been saying that shit forever. Public service announcement, leggings are not pants. Cover your ass. This is what my post said. Yo, I was wrong as shit. Sorry about the cursing. I was wrong. I was so wrong. Leggings are pants. Look at my ass. Look at my ass, and I'm not going to apologize for it. Show me your ass. I want to see your ass. Let me see it. Why are you hiding such a beautiful ass with your shirt? That is where I'm at now. That is not where I was then. Because I was wrong. And, like, I look at these posts, and they're cringy AF, like, for real. But they were where I was at the time. They were where I was at because for lots of reasons. I can go ahead and narrate my reasons. I was like insecure about my body. I was like, probably that's the motivating factor. I was like judgy. I wasn't like understanding that it's okay for me to admire other people. It doesn't detract from me. I was full out in a scarcity mentality. I was like blinded by like a whole bunch of bullshit. And so I was wrong. Do you know how hard it is for people to admit that they are wrong? It is like the hardest thing, especially if any of y'all were raised by narcissists or narcissist adjacent personality types, because that was never modeled for you. And don't worry, I'm going to talk about narcissistic family dynamics at some point very soon, because that's been highly requested. What's it like to be a spiritual person in a narcissistic kind of environment? I'm going to talk all about it, so I'll talk more about that there. But we didn't get it modeled for us, so we don't know how to say we were wrong. But it's okay. Practice. Think of something you were wrong about and just go, I was wrong. It's like liberating. It's like freeing. It's like, oh my God, I don't have to pretend to like agree with myself. Oh my God, I don't have to like pretend to be right. It's so nice to get to be wrong. And yet, in the spirituality communities right now, people can do things from a really nice place, but they can still be being wrong in some kind of way. But oh my gosh, wow, it really doesn't go over well when I try to say that to anybody, like, ever. Now, on the one hand, it's because no one knows how to admit that they're wrong. And then on the other hand, no one likes to be told that they're wrong. No one is, like, okay with the idea of wrong. I love wrong because it means that I get to learn something more. It means I get to see something differently. It means I get to have a deeper understanding of some shit. Like, I am so bored with myself. Aren't you bored with yourself yet? Wouldn't it be fun to be wrong about something and like learn a whole different life perspective? I would really like us all to work on like embracing the joy of being wrong. But anyway, so, okay, let's get to the brass tacks of examples. Someone will come into the big Facebook group that I have and they will want to make a post. And in this post, they will be talking about something that's a closed practice. Now, I'm going to pause for a second and define what that means. A closed practice is a sacred rite or ritual that belongs to a religion, and in order to know the details of or to execute the ritual itself, you have to be a part of that religion because it's sacred and it is secret and it belongs only to the people who are in that religion. Now, for some people, this feels like an attack, or it feels like a form of gatekeeping or outcasting. Sometimes people will say, like, if we're all one, how can anything be closed? To that I say, are we all one, though? Or is that just convenient to your argument right now? Because society says we're not all one. Society divides us, has us divided by class, by race, by socioeconomic status, by gender or non-gender, by sexual orientation, by our health. Society has us filtered in all kinds of different categories. Are we all one? We are? So you're okay with a standard minimum wage that allows everybody to be paid what they need to be paid to not only survive, but to thrive? We're all one. Your child can choose their gender and who they choose to date or marry or be with and whether they choose to have children or seek higher education. That's okay with you? Because we're not all one yet. That's part of the mess we're cleaning up. We're not all one. And what's happened historically in our culture is that people were made other than. They were told, oh, you look different than me. You don't get access to my spaces. I'm more elite than you, so you can't join me in my party. And then when those people had the right to turn around, or had the audacity, I guess, to turn around and go create entire lives for themselves and not sit in the corner and cry because they were being excommunicated from like the white man's party, the white man got angry and he said, "How dare you find joy without me? And by the way, what cool shit do you have in there? I'm going to go ahead and take it as my own. But you still can't come into my party." And he pilfered and stole, and he took for his own things that were not his, things that people had to create and fight for without the resources that he was busy hoarding all for himself. Is that fair? Is that okay? Imagine if you went to a party or a play date with your child. And there was one child there who said, "These certain children are allowed to play with all my toys. But you, and pointed to your child and another child, you can't play with my toys." And let's imagine then that your child went and found some sticks and rocks and made the best of a fucked up situation and was having a good time playing with their sticks and rocks. And the first child came back and said, "What are you doing? You look like you're having fun over here." And your child was like, "Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to be bored, and I'm not going to just sit here and cry all day, so I'm going to play with these rocks and sticks." And that first child was like, "Give me your rocks and sticks," and took them from your child and walked away and went back to his friends. And when your child followed him and said, "Can I play too?" he said, "No, you still can't play with me. Go somewhere else. You're not allowed here." But then proceeded to play with the rocks and sticks with all the other children while outcasting your child. Can you imagine how awful and ridiculous and effed up that situation is? But that's exactly the story of what we've done to marginalized groups. Are you kidding me? You can't join me, but I'm going to take all your stuff and use it as if it's my own. Spirituality tells us that that's a fucked up way of being. And those are spirituality's words. I didn't say it. Spirituality said it through me. Channel is open. You see what I mean, though? Like, in what capacity is that oneness or kindness or treating others how we would want to be treated or having unity mindset? It's not. It's bad. And we are here as awakened individuals walking a spiritual path to dismantle that. We're here to fix it. We're here to, like, say no, mean first child. You can't outcast my child. All of you have to play together. And then we're here to, like, give the rocks and sticks back to our own child who has created a little rock and stick family out of a need because he was isolated and alone somewhere. But when this happens in our culture, there are people that have a really hard time with this. And I understand it comes from a place of wanting unity, but you're wanting to get to the end before you've gone through the middle. And that's not acceptable. See, that's the part that's not okay. First, we have to heal the trauma. First, we have to heal the trauma. And the way in which we heal the trauma is through safety and respect. Because what has happened to other cultures is that their safety and respect has been stripped of them. They weren't allowed to have safety. They weren't allowed to be respected. Being robbed from, being harmed, that was just a part of it for them. And that is unacceptable. And as a culture, presumably, we have said, okay, fine, that was wrong. And we've initiated laws and all kinds of other things to, on the surface, say, everyone is equal. Everyone's invited to the party. We're all here together. Outcasting is not allowed. And at least we've done that. At least we've put in the infrastructure now. Took a minute. Please remember that marriage equality wasn't even a thing until super recently. Please remember that it is still pretty much legal to racially profile people. There's a lot of problems still. But the infrastructure, at least on the surface, looks like it's inclusive, and so we'll go with that. But the way in which we make it safe, the way in which we make it okay, is by offering safety and respect. Respect means I will trust your words and I will do my best to adhere to your boundaries. Respect is important for all living beings, including the trees, including the animals, including our children who don't often get respect, including our elderly and our disabled, including ourselves. And we have to learn to respect our own selves before we can really understand the impact of what it feels like to be respected. But when someone in a different culture comes to us and says, "Hey, so that thing you're trying to do, it's really not for everybody. It's one of the things that we had to do when we weren't allowed to come to your party. And it's really important to us that we still have this thing. It's really sacred to us. And we, as we are trying to demonstrate respect and safety, have to respond and say, I'm so sorry that happened to you, and I'm sorry that I'm stealing your things even still. I will not do that anymore. I will respect that you have special things that belong to you, and I will allow you to have those things." This is how we climb the ladder to oneness. You can't just jump there. You can't just decide you're healed. You have to walk through the healing. So people will post in the big group and they'll be like, "Okay, so I was doing this thing," and they'll say, for example, that they were smudging. This is such a common one. It's everywhere. The word smudging has been misunderstood to mean saging. Smudging is a very specific religious practice that belongs to very specific religious sects in the Native and Indigenous communities. We, on the common norm, don't know how to smudge because we weren't taught it, because it doesn't belong to us, because it's not a part of our culture. We know how to sage, but we don't know how to smudge. Some people in the Native communities have said that it bothers them when random everybody's use the word smudging. Other people in the Native communities have said that it doesn't bother them. But when in doubt, we seek to be as harmless as possible at all times, because remember, we're cultivating safety and respect for other people. We're doing that on behalf of our ancestors who didn't offer safety and respect to those people. We're doing it on behalf of the fact that it's not the norm, and we believe that all people deserve safety and respect. And so when someone says, "Hey, could you just use a different word? Because that thing that you're talking about has a lot of specific meaning to me, and it hurts me to see it be so misrepresented and misunderstood, because it's actually super sacred." When we hear this, we're being invited into an opportunity to align, to like match with our higher self, to match with the trajectory that this plane is on, which is, I agree, oneness and unity consciousness. But we can only get there if we act in alignment with it. So we should accept these invitations to be like, "Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I was wrong. I didn't know. That's okay. now I do know, I'm just going to do differently. Because oftentimes the solution is as easy as just not doing something or not even saying something. It's just a shift in your language. So easy, right? To just, instead of say smudging, to say saging. Because let me be sure, like real with you, you're not smudging, you're saging. Smudging involves a lot of different steps with a lot of different spiritual components, with a lot of different herbs that you don't really know about. You're not smudging anyway. You're not even doing the thing that you're fighting to say you're doing. So I don't understand the big deal. If someone says to you, it hurts my feelings when you say this word, isn't it a no-brainer to not say that word? And yet so many people have the hardest time with this because they don't know how to say, I'm sorry, I didn't know, I was wrong, I'll do it differently. Such an easy sentence, such an easy thing to change. The way I like to describe it is like this. In the Jewish tradition, when a child turns 13, they become, in essence, an adult. And they have a religious service in which they read from the Torah and they do their sacred rites, and then they usually get to have some kind of party to celebrate. And this experience is called a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah. It's a very specific ritual with a component that takes place at the temple. Lots and lots of studying and practicing, by the way, goes into a bar bat mitzvah ceremony. The child themselves has to go to Hebrew school and to practice and to recite and to memorize. There's a lot that goes into this. Judaism is a very philosophical religion, and these children have to understand the philosophy behind what they're doing. It's a big deal. And so they have the temple component where they do and perform their sacred service and their sacred ritual and their sacred rite. And then they celebrate, as we all do in all cultures, with food and gathering and happiness and joy. If I was to throw myself a birthday party, I would be wrong to call it a bat mitzvah, because it's not a bat mitzvah, it's a birthday party. If I was to throw myself the standard American birthday party of, like, I don't know, cake and ice cream and party games and presents and happy birthday, we can all agree that if I said come to my bat mitzvah and I threw the standard American birthday party, people would be a little bit like, what is happening? And yet this is exactly what we're doing when we're using the wrong words to describe the things that we want to be doing in our lives. When we're trying to perform sacred ceremonies and just say, I can have a bat mitzvah if I want to, why can't I? Because it's not a bat mitzvah what you're doing, first of all. But second of all, are you Jewish? Did you go through the rites? Have you done all the learning? Are you 13? Do you check all the boxes that mean that you are doing this sacred thing? Because if not, you're doing it wrong. You're using the wrong word. It doesn't belong to you. And I think that white people, and I am a white people, so I can say this too, in our DNA, we have a problem being told no, because we were never told no, and because we just think that everything belongs to us. So we don't like hearing that we're not allowed to access certain things, despite the fact that our ancestors have been telling everybody else they're not allowed to access things all the time. A little bit of karma there, and I'm using karma in the right way in that sentence. Things that happened in previous lives taking an effect on us in this life. We are now being denied access to things that we don't have any right in having access to. And that is a part of the karma of this race of people. And it's okay. It is okay. What if it's okay? What if we don't have to get super angry or defensive? What if we can anchor into our spirituality and go, you know what? Yeah, balance in all things is a part of healing. Respect and safety indicate that I should be okay not having access to everything just because I feel like it. That is one of the lessons. Because there are certain practices in spirituality, rites and rituals that are not for everybody. Now, if you're upset about this, they can be for you if you go ahead and do your due diligence and join those religions. You want access to voodoo? Go ahead and pay a voodoo priestess to be initiated and blessed and mentored and taught all the sacred rites and rituals. But it's going to be up to them to determine if you're allowed to be in that world. There are pathways to these things. If you want desperately to be a part of them, figure out how to be a part of them. But don't go in and just take it as if it's your own and say, I'm allowed to do whatever I want because I feel like it. Because in that way, you are not modeling respect. And in that way, you are not modeling kindness. You are not having good boundaries. But people get so upset by this because they don't know how to be wrong and say, sorry, didn't realize. There are just certain practices in this world that are closed to the collective. And that is because of the nature of the way in which the world has been up until this point. And if you ever want that to shift into oneness, we can't spiritually bypass our way there. We have to first show that we are capable of respecting those boundaries. There's alternate ways to do all of the things that you want to do. Dig into the places that are accessible, the things that are open, the pantheons that do allow any and everyone to join. Work your magic that way. Most things in this world are the same thing with different words attached to them. You can easily decide, well, what's my goal and outcome here? Do I want to energetically cleanse my space? Okay, if I can't smudge, I can sage, or I can burn other herbs, or I can do incense cleansing. BT dubs, you want to actually cleanse your space? Go ahead and burn some frankincense and myrrh resin on a charcoal and put that smoke in your spaces, because that's going to cleanse your space more than really anything else. Sidebar, witch tip of the day. But to appropriate means to steal. It means to take what does not belong to you and put it on you as if it is yours, without having done the work, without having walked the path, without having earned the right. And if we want to talk about energy, to do something that you haven't earned is energetically not in alignment, and it will backfire upon you. And that is just my opinion. It is not a fact. The universe is interested in alignment, and alignment means things matching where they are. So to steal from another culture something that has been hard-earned and fiercely protected, and to wear it as if it belongs to you, is a problem. Not just for you, but in the eyes of the energy field, in my opinion. And I don't want you catching some energetic backlash from not aligning with what actually rightfully belongs to and with you. But this is a question of ethics. Now, in my spaces, we don't teach closed practices because we respect that they are closed. So if you're trying to submit a post to my group, you're going to get denied if there's a sense of appropriation about it, because my group's foundation is education, and I don't believe in teaching something that I don't have the right to teach. I'm not going to tell you what to do in your own life. I'm not going to tell you how to be. I'm going to heavily suggest that you align with ethics and morals and your higher self. I'm going to heavily suggest it. But all I can control is my own spaces. And in my spaces, we seek to minimize harm as much as possible. And I hope that you can do some soul searching and seek to minimize harm within yourself and around yourself as well. Because I wish for you to have a life that has the least amount of harm possible. Because I care about you, and I think that we all deserve safety and respect. And sometimes in order to have it in our own lives, we have to get really good at giving it. That's a lesson I've learned from just living in general. Whatever it is that I think I want, I really first practice giving it all away first. I practice showing up to others with that energy and giving it out. And in that way, I really deeply understand what it is I'm calling forth. So for you, I wish that you have a beautiful rest of your day. I hope this has cleared up some misconceptions and ideas around what cultural appropriation is. I didn't go into a lot of specifics because I'm not looking to incite a fire of kickback as to whether the topics that I'm choosing to dissect with you are actual appropriation or not. I want you to understand the concept of it because the concept is more important than the actual moments. If you can understand the concept and if you can realize that being defensive around appropriation is a scarcity reflex within yourself, then you can start to do the work to heal that and to just show up a little bit differently. I hope you guys have a beautiful rest of your day, and I will talk to you soon.